This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Mary Morris is the winner of the Wheelbarrow Book Prize, and she's here with a poem from that book. Here's Mary.
Thank you, Grace. This is a poem I wrote, one of the many poems I wrote during the pandemic. And it was also during the last presidential election when very much was at stake and we were craving hope. Act of faith. Plant one hyacinth, bulb above water. One day a single green shoot divides into two strapped leaves as winter days gather. Justice, so close to the brink, you nearly reach out to caress it. The red flicker on the other side of your window, while days swim by in dreams and duty, cooking beans, reading mail, alone in a world of lockdown. As one side of this purple flower each day blooms into tiny florets, until its entire fist opens lilac, and you, your house, lives in fragrance. Remember the air infused with pine following the deer who appeared at the edge of gold chanterelle, your mother in her honeysuckle, a sun's full laughter, building forts in the arroyo behind juniper, and beans on the stove frothing, black rosary beads. While the flower crown in the center of your house fuses the air you breathe with remembrance, and you are hungry and you eat.
Mary Morris ending that poem with three monosyllabic words, and you eat. What a heartbeat. What is this book about, Mary? Is there a lot of Mary in it?
There are a few Marys in there. It's about really about carrying a body in many ways. It's about women and the body, that border between the body and dying, living and dying, breath and death. I think I have in one poem. From my perspective, I have a history of epilepsy. And beginning when I was six, started fainting regularly. And then at 28, I started having grand mal seizures. And I have not had any seizures for several years. I take really good care of myself, and not everybody's able to do that. And epilepsy is a scary diagnosis that a lot of people don't understand. And I know a lot of people have written these amazing poems about cancer that's so prevalent, but there are a lot of types of disabilities that are not, you know, that we have shame about. Which I have. It's been very hard for me to discuss and actually to get it out there on the page.
Beautifully, beautifully transformed.
So it's, I had written these poems and I was afraid to get them out, and I started getting them out and I started collecting a book. And I had, through the years, done research on other people who were epileptic, because I didn't know any. And I knew that Harriet Tubman had seizures. I knew that there were a number of people I didn't know, like Joan of Arc and Dante, a lot of people. And I wanted to focus actually more on the female, because especially of Salem, where there were, so they were saying some women were, it sounds like they had seizures and burned at the stake. And there were so many issues with women, especially being pointed at in everything.
Well, you have made that your muse, which means that art does save and art does transform. Now, you start your resume with a sentence that says, Mary Morris was raised in a large Catholic family. How important is that statement to your work?
I have to say my husband sort of did my resume for me.
But I mean, there's something interesting about that, because it does permeate your sensibilities. being from a large family and being from a Catholic education.
Right, right. It was very influential, I think, on my writing, extremely. I mean, the images, not only the images, but the belief systems and going to Catholic schools for 9 years, I got into the row, but I questioned the row, you know, actually early on. I would say maybe even around the fourth grade when we were studying geography, and I learned that we had religion class, and if you weren't baptized, you went to limbo. And I thought, well, what about these people on the other side of the world who don't have, they've said, they're not Christian and they don't believe in limbo.
That's where we get the difference between faith and religion, because you are moving from the brick and mortar idea of the religiosity and the church to something which breathes life into your poetry. And I feel it is very much a system under your words. So let's hear another poem.
Okay. This is called All Souls. And my mother died a few years ago, just around this time. And it was always a very important time for us. All Souls. Under the gold of a hunter's moon, I run into a large raccoon, ascending an ancient peñon. It's just like my mother, who died last week at 96, to appear as this. Clever, masked, climbing with her small, deft hands. She loved creatures, the costumes her children dressed in. One brood of goblins, a vampire, the baby sateened into a red-tailed devil. My mother is here. I need to light fires, torch yellow beeswax candles, sing hymns to the moon, offer prayers. I had never seen this mammal in the desert, but here she is, large-spirited on a clear evening, scaling October's end. Time to remember auspicious numbers, the faithful departed, our most revered martyrs, this one who carried me wholly. Prudent and ravenous for this world, I canonize her, Demeter, ghost, autumn spirit.
Mm. Hymns to the Moon. Mary Morris is the author of earlier collections that include Enter Water, Swimmer, and Dear October, both award-winning books of poems. Your work is personal and it's historical, and I think that's why it's become so popular, because you make it a pyramid of light that comes from the personal, and you bring women into this, and I was very interested in your women characters. Why did you choose the ones you did, and why did you select those particular women to write poems about?
Because they suffered physically in their bodies, and Joan of Arc had epilepsy, and there were numerous issues, and then of course Frida Kahlo was in this horrible accident where she faced so many challenges, and both of these people were so brave, and they're almost like role models.
Now, is this knowledge from a lifelong reverence to these women among, these are only two among several in your book, or did you do research, or both?
Both. Mm-hmm. Both. I did research on a number of women, Marie Curie, a lot of women. I was interested. I was mostly interested in women with epilepsy, and then it just kept going on.
Yeah. And Marie Curie had her own problems. It seemed like you pinpoint the women who, as you say, suffered, but look what they did with what they had.
Yes.
Look what they did. If ever there is the holy act of transformation, let's hear a couple of your women poems.
Sure. Portrait of a Joan of Arc, 1412 to 1431. Steel clanked in armor, soldiers mount their steeds. Yet it is a girl who leads the French army to victory. An epileptic peasant given visions through archangels. An equestrian teen dressed like a man with shorn hair. Charged with heresy, she hears voices as if possessed and is suspected of magic and witchcraft. A warrior afflicted with seizures is tied to a stake, forced to watch her horse torched before she herself is burned alive. Singe of her innocence, char of a tormentor's ungodliness, martyred, Our Lady of Resistance, a flame for our world.
And another.
Portrait of Orpheus, Frida Kahlo, Love and Death. In the accident, an entire century swam by. X-rays, surgeries, resurrections. Algunas palabras, a few words of encouragement. Faith, the great exorcist. Healings failed. Failed again. A haunting. But how do you fall in love with a man who is el fin de todo, the end of everything? How do you love a sister who sleeps with your husband in the middle of October when the air is so still and full of poetry, the simple-minded condemned to a lack of mystery? Some believe the body is an empire filled with past lives, lotería chiquita, small lottery of the living. Is the body sanctuary or battle? How would one know in the hospital of paint and knives? Here in this plaza, canciones spill music of mi amor. Drummers beat rhythms like cicadas. Guitarists strum wooden instruments with strings of gut and gold.
Mary Morris has received the Rita Dove Award, the Western Humanities Review Writers Prize, New Mexico Discovery Award, and the National Federation Press Women's Communication Award, among others. What are you doing with all those awards, Mary? Making a patchwork, making a quilt? It's good though, right? It's fun. It's good.
It's good to get things out, you know, and it's...
And it's good to get a kiss on the cheek.
It is good to get
in a while. And reason to go on.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it gives us reason to go on. Someone heard you. I love that. Camus says that we poets are always telling the same story again and again. What do you think is the story that we keep telling in our different voices? What are we talking about? First of all, a death is certainly something that only the poets will tackle, and you are not afraid of it, but poet, it's our job.
Well, I think depth, poets going into depth in their writing is really, really important. And you know, if you're writing something, if it has some depth, if it has some meat on it, and risk, I tend to go towards poems, poets that have a lot of risk and depth, and they are my inspiration.
Depth. Not death. Yes.
Depth.
And so beyond the shallow. So we want to read the literal level first and know that there is a little subtext there.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And what do you call risk?
Risk is maybe a little dark and maybe putting something out there that might make someone a little uncomfortable. Emotion, a depth. It doesn't have to be uncomfortable. It could be just so much love and something very deep.
Well, not all truth is pretty.
No.
And so what you always point out is that there are parts of us that had better be talked about and made beautiful. And that is just absolutely what you do. So let's hear two poems in a row that tell part of your story. This is Mary Morris. I'm Grace Cavalieri. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress, and we are on remote to New Mexico.
Winter Chapel. Today I stay home as it snows, and I wonder, how can something so fast and beautiful be this quiet? Watching birds dart from branch to branch in order to keep warm, I make flyers about women's rights to circulate in wind. Notice that the patio's circular table, sparkled diamond white, resembles a marriage cake. This is the night to bundle up. Place candles and leaves in the table's center. Light them. Recite vows of hope and peace to a country gone awry. In ceremony for this wedding of winter while standing in a spotlight of flames. Within a dark cold. Planning. Revolution. Appointment with Dr. Siegel. Across the neurosurgeon's massive desk sits a small pot with a brain cactus. Maybe it's not funny. I pretend I don't see it. He speaks of a 10-hour surgery as if it storms today, yet tomorrow we set sail for sunny Granada. Sometimes tools resemble weapons. So I departed that office within, a concrete steel obelisk of a medical spire in the boombox of Spanish Harlem, where I met the A train, left with the decision of whether to be blinded and paralyzed by an operation that would obliterate the malformation or take my chances. I was a new mother, my blouse flowered with milk.
Oh, that is going to make you famous. Sometimes tools do resemble weapons. Yes, and that backstory for your poem you started the program with, that you had been diagnosed with something. And now tell us a little more about that context of being diagnosed when your son was a baby.
Yeah, so I was diagnosed with an arteriovenous malformation in the middle of my brain, which was inoperable. Because it was deep and it was large, and it would cause blindness and paralysis. And when I was 32, I was pregnant, 5 months pregnant with my son, and I had a brain hemorrhage. Spent a month here at the hospital and ICU. And after I had him 37 years ago, I was told to go to New York to Columbia University Hospital and have the surgery. And my mother and my husband and my son and I packed up and we went there. And I decided not to have it 37 years ago.
And your son is in many of your poems, and he's just so lovable and so mischievous that everyone will have to get this book just to see her son. This is, what is the title again?
Late Self-Portraits.
Who is the cover?
Oh, the cover is this amazing woman. I actually saw.
I thought it was like someone in a great museum.
I actually saw it in a museum in Bruges, and I saw it and I thought, I want this on a cover. And so I actually was able to contact her through this museum, through a website or something. And her name is Danielle Van Zedelhoff, and she is an incredible photographer, a huge photograph. She has shows all over the world, in the Louvre, everywhere.
It's worth the price of the book, I'll tell you.
And
it's,
I contacted her, yeah. And she said, I said, well, what do you need to get paid? She said, oh, I don't need to get paid anything. Yeah. And she said, you know, it's just my pleasure to have a photograph with another woman on this book. And I was like, you've got me. And she, and that photo is actually her son when he was younger.
Well, it goes, the tone is the tone of the book. And I think you picked a really beautiful one. In addition to the other hard subjects that you make so glorious, you do approach death, and you do have poems about people on their deathbed. And you've been with a few people as they died. I never have, except for my husband the first time. But as a child, I never saw anyone die. And not until this late age, sitting at my husband's bed, did I see the difference. But what did you learn about that knife edge between life and death as you sat there?
The dying,
That moment.
It went on for so long.
In your mother's case.
Yes. And it was incredible because I lived down the street and I was there. My brother lived there. So I would go over there she was pretty alert. She was doing Facebook about 2 months before she died.
It's a great poem about that. Mary, your mother's death has been profound to you. And death in itself is really kind of the poet's job, don't you think? Nobody else wants it. How does that inform you? Although it seems a sad thing to say, but in our culture, no one really wants to grapple with that in Western culture. And yet the poet, it's a standby. The poet has to honor it. The poet has to acknowledge it. What are your feelings about it? Because you do it so well.
Thank you, Grace. Absolutely. The death is in a lot of my poems. It is the great mystery. It is the great mystery. And we have to, I think, channel it. And a lot of people have fear about death. And it's not a morbid thing. It is a true part of each of us. And
it makes for, is quite lyrical, actually, because of the mystery.
Yes.
Well, the nuns taught us that we knew what, where, when, and how, but we didn't know why. Do you remember that one?
I do.
A famous standby. Well, you have done your best to make death quite beautiful with language. So please give us two poems from Mary Morris on the poet and the poem.
Dear November, it is the closest we have ever been. Slipping off my jeans, sliding into the shower with my mother, washing the galaxy of her back scattered with planets. Once she carried me behind that tumor, emptied her milk into my mouth. The body remembers what is primal. I dress and feed her, brush her hair. Outside, three bronze leaves suspend from the ash. My mother and I lie down, fragrant with soap, curled as embryos. Later we wake like lovers, our bodies spooned.
Oh, Mary, how many children were there in your family?
My mother had 10 children.
And where are you in the constellation?
I have 5 younger and 4 older.
And the middle child is curled up like a spoon. Do you think that she made each of you feel as if you were her favorite?
She absolutely did. And she did that with her grandchildren, too. They all felt like that they were her. A grandchild said that after her death. We all felt like we were her favorite.
We love it. We just love hearing everything you have to say. So give us another poem.
Flight 387. Today is a plane occupied by Moroccans and Italians. Some believe in Muhammad. Others pray to Jesus. Some wear a hijab. A few are in jeans. The plane ascends through turbulence until it levels at 30,000 feet. All are served coffee or tea. An attendant delivers menus with a footnote that says, does not contain pork. There is pasta with cheese and tagine with dates and chicken. A mother speaks Berber. A father, a dialect from Sardinia. My child needs water. May I have a blanket? I am still hungry. When all have eaten and the sky darkens, a baby cries out, then another. It's as if they understand each other. Tonight, all will cross an ocean. Tomorrow, a border.
Mary Morris has traveled the world, and we're lucky she's right here and right now with us with a final poem.
Rembrandt, late self-portrait. Crimson with broken blood vessels, he forfeits the mirror, eating pears with a glass of time. Listens to snow fall behind memory, while cadmium corpuscle, bone black shadow, and lead white glisten of drooling lip tell us how to draw death close, how to paint ravens in.
The voice of Mary Morris, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Snippet Fund, by Natalie Canavor, and by Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin is our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.